Blue Wire.
Three on the way. Yes. Paul George nails it.
For the win.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the B-Ball Index podcast. We're brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcasting Network. My name is Crandis McBasketball, but friends call me Tim. And today we have a good friend with us, KJ Smith, who is an assistant coach with, and I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, and I just tried to practice it, Unifacisa?
That is correct, Unifacisa. Ooh.
For the Brazilian Basketball League division, they won a Division II title last season. They're up at Division I right now. He might not admit it, but his team is being talked about as the surprise of the season. So very cool. I don't know, somebody I've been following since he was in the U.S. KJ, would love to hear a little bit more about your background. What brought you to Brazil? And like as a young guy, what is it like going into a situation with a foreign language and having to take a leadership role?
Well, first, I'm very excited to be on this podcast, and I'm a follower of your website as well. So being able to come on and, you know, have this basketball conversation with you and exchange knowledge, I think is a really fun thing. Going right into it, as far as how I got here, a close friend of mine who's from Brazil, whom I met at Summer League, long story short, put me in touch with some people about coming to be an assistant. I was fortunate enough to get the job last season, and luckily we were able to win the Division II title in our first year. So now going into year one at the Division I level, we're playing well and hoping to build on that success.
That's awesome. And I did get right into it. I am not a good host. I am very much the analyst more than the play-by-play guy. Usually Jacob or Tony will take that over, so bear with me. But cool to hear your background, KJ. One of the first things that I thought of when I knew we were going to talk was, and one question that came to mind for me, and I'm sure has come to the mind of the listeners, is what have the biggest differences been between watching and contributing towards and working in American basketball compared to the Brazilian game? And what things do we as Americans maybe have to learn from that style of play, and maybe vice versa going the other way as well?
I would say two of the biggest things that we can take from it is, one, just the terms of physicality. The game is a lot more physical here. As a guard, as a post player, you have to be able to handle a lot more contact to do what you have to do on the floor. From a conceptual standpoint, the triple post here in Brazil is a concept that I like a lot, and it's definitely something I'll bring back to the States. And it's very different than the triple post in the United States, which is mainly known as Tex Winner's Triangle, or the taboo of today's basketball, so to speak, even though a lot of teams run variations of it. So with that, in Brazil, there's a lot of teams that still play with two traditional centers, or a true center and a true power forward. So to deal with that spacing, their triple post is another variation of the popular split cut, which just allows for not just better shot selection, but more motion and movement, as typically when the ball goes into the post, after that one split cut, the entire play just dies. So it's another way to keep things moving and keep teams honest defensively.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And even in the U.S., like, we don't see as many teams running split cuts or flare actions or different things during post-ups as much as I know I would like to see. So it's interesting to hear that that's a particular action or something similar to that is working well in the Brazilian game. And I think that's certainly something we could learn. And like you said, a lot of times here, it'll be run and then the play just dies and it turns into an ISO. And you might still have 15 seconds left to be able to kick it out and run something else. But the set can just kind of degenerate from there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the ultimate goal, is not just going away from the one-on-one or the post play, but whether it's, you know, posting up your two guard, whether it's posting up your five, what type of movement you have away from the ball just makes it that much more difficult to defend in one-on-one situations. because players, especially at this level, they're so skilled, they're so talented, they know how you're going to guard them. So you have to find ways to maximize as many people as possible.
Right. And it's not just about spacing. Like you're saying, it's really, you have to have functional spacing. You can be standing further apart, but if you're not pressuring the defense enough to keep them guarding you closely, those individual matchups will be tampered with through help defense. And in that motion, that weak side motion, those things off the ball, just like you're saying, can really open up a lot for you on the ball, even if you're not really hoping to score off that flare screen. But if they completely leave it alone to go help in the post or help on your ISO, you've got shooters open. So it's interesting to hear about how those same principles can apply in different games. Conceptually, something that's always been interesting to me is just the X's and O's of the game. And I know that from when we've spoken, that one of your main responsibilities at your current team is handling those X's and O's. When you got to the team in Brazil, how did you go about designing an offense? Were you just trying to find plays that maybe fit the personnel, or were you, you know, just creating things, drawing things up on a whiteboard? And what is your process going about something like that?
I think the very first thing before I did anything, and this is before we even signed the roster, was after I had initially signed my contract and joined the team, before traveling to Brazil, I watched every game of the team's past season and basically watched every one of those games twice so that I was very comfortable with every player in the league, no matter how significant, and also being comfortable with the coaches, what they were doing on offense, how they're defending things, because I think that gives you a big indicator on how you can attack their strategy. Every coach has tendencies. And then from there, you start to sign your players and build a roster. And after you've accumulated that talent, you start to slowly work into what the team does well, whether it's the drive and kick game, the motion game, the post-up, half-court, transition, being able to take it one piece at a time and build your game model, so to speak.
And I know you've spoken, when we talked before the pod, around how much turnover that you've had from last season to this season. So for you, essentially having two new rosters in 2 years and two new schemes, I'm assuming in 2 years, probably with some carryover, are you building, are the signings for the roster at all relating to what the team already does well or what you like to do schematically? Or is it really get the best players available and then we'll trust that we can find a system that can optimize them?
With us, it's definitely more about guys that we knew could fit into the system we had coming in. And especially in these 2 years, the offensive and defensive strategies have been on complete other ends of the spectrum. There's not much of a comparison between the two. So for us, being a smaller club compared to some of these bigger teams, it's important that we not only just bring guys that can obviously play and be talented, but guys that have the potential to really grow and show more than they have in the past under this particular system.
Mm-hmm. Love that. That's something that over at B-Ball Index, we talk about a lot. We've talked about it probably on half of our podcast. Here's a guy who has talent in X, Y, and Z areas that for whatever reason is being underutilized or maybe perfectly utilized. And understanding the relationship between talent and impact is such an interesting piece of the game to me. And coaching is probably the number one thing impacting that and fitting players within a system or a scheme. So that's really interesting to me. And then once you have your general, you know, formula for attack figured out, are you using plays that you've used in the past? Are you going on fast model and looking for plays? Are you trying to watch some of the best Brazilian or US teams that stealing plays? Are you just, you know, starting from scratch and designing plays? What does that process look like once you figured out generally what you're looking for?
For us, it's definitely a mix of everything. As many coaches I'm sure listening will tell you, you know, this is there's not many secrets in this game, especially X's and O's wise. So everyone is always stealing from everybody. So whether it's draw, EuroLeague, I'll watch the Australian League, I'll watch the Chinese League, I don't care where it's from. If it's good and there's a concept that works, we'll assimilate it, take what we like about it, and try to add that to our collective game model as a whole.
That's really interesting. I will admit I have not watched any Chinese or Australian basketball, but just that willingness to, you know, open up your eyes and look around, not just at what you're seeing in front of you or what you've done in the past, but trying to really locate those best practices, I think is such a critical thing. I know in the business world that can be very indicative of success. And for coaching, that's such a good way to just continuously being improving and making sure you have the best arsenal to throw out there and be winning games. So that's awesome. Moving towards some more data centric questions. What would you say, or I guess, how would you say your approach to data has changed as you've progressed throughout your career, maybe from the US to where you are now, or even last year to this year? Is it something you've always really leveraged and emphasized, or what is your relationship with data as a coach?
For sure, I've definitely always had an appreciation for it, whether it was being an assistant or head coaching somewhere. I've definitely always been able to take information in and use that to my advantage. And I definitely believe that the only change from the start of my career, I think now it's year 9 or 10 for me as far as coaching overall. The only difference for me now is that I have a better view of what specific things I want either tracked or observed over a point of time to allow me to have a better feel for what I need as a information I need on the floor. Because I think it all goes back to preparation, especially as an assistant coach, where for me personally, being unprepared or not having a sheet of paper of some kind on the bench to me is just really detrimental to success. So the more information I can have, the better. And it doesn't have to be necessarily analytics formulas. It could be just anything that's not generally tracked that helps your team win, whether it's how many times your team touches the paint or passes per possession, but finding what you want as a coach and putting value on it. Because once you track it, your players take more pride and value in it, and they're more likely to take that seriously and add that to their games.
This is gold. I was just about to mention how, I mean, a lot of the perspective of analytics, especially maybe in the online community, or if you talk to some old school coaches or fans, they almost see it as something threatening or telling them to play a very specific way, just in a broad sense, but really it's just information. And it doesn't need to be some complex formula telling you something that you don't understand or you can't explain or is hard to make actionable. Data is just information, and it can be simple stuff like paint touches or points. It can be more complex than that, but it's really about, like you said, finding the data points that align with some of your priorities and then being able to track those to hold your team accountable, help the players be more motivated. I know one of the really simple things I did working in college was we started tracking box outs, which is not complex from a mathematical standpoint. From a watching it on film standpoint, it was a little bit harder because you have to make some judgment calls. But the second we started tracking it, it started going up because players take pride in stuff like that. And you could talk about being tough or you can talk about executing, but if you're not able to track it in any way, and again, it doesn't have to be complex, but if you're not able to measure how well you're doing, it's tough to know you need to improve or know how much you're improving, and being able to see that progress can be pretty motivating as well. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, and I tell this to friends of mine all the time, analytics have been around long before I was probably born, and we just didn't call it analytics. It was called scouting or something else. Mm-hmm. But regardless of your scheme, whether if you're a dribble drive motion coach and you really like attacking the basket, how many paint touches are you getting per quarter? Boom, that's technically analytics, right? Or if you're a motion team, how many off-ball screen opportunities are leading to baskets? Again, that's analytics. So just finding what you like and track it, and then let the players take care of the rest.
Yep, absolutely. And data can be so unnecessarily complex online, and I think and I saw this firsthand, and you're probably experiencing this, the data that you see on like Twitter is very, very different from the data that you care about as a coach. You're not pulling up somebody's box plus minus or VORP or things like that. Not with your own team, with your own players. It's more of those actionable insights that you're trying to derive and make sure people are executing scheme or just executing principles. A question I have going off of that would be, if you can make one piece of data, you know, pop up on your league's website or pop up for fans at nba.com/stats that you think would be useful or valuable that could just be automated in some way that currently isn't tracked, what would you magically make available for us?
I would say that's actually a good question. There's a couple of options here that may or may not be perfect as far as the idea, but the general concept I believe will make sense. From a defensive perspective, I would love to see something tracked along the lines of, let's say, stops, where they're just tracking how many times when a certain individual is defending the ball handler, that person is contesting and forcing a missed shot or getting a steal, or even something as simple as they're attempting to drive and attack the basket and you force them to kick out. You don't give up a direct line drive, right? You're stopping that person. So I think that would be something interesting to track. Obviously, that gets a little complex in terms of you have to understand defense fairly well to know how that works. And another one would probably be what we track here in the league is called, our league's efficiency, which is a cumulative of the positive and negative stats you do in a game. So overall, our efficiency in the league is your general points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, all adding up to one particular number as far as the value. And you subtract that from the total of missed twos, missed threes, turnovers, and free throws. And using that as an indicator of, okay, here's the efficiency that person contributed to their team for this night.
Interesting. And that's almost an impact stat in a way, where you're assigning variables to those positive or negative outcomes, and in a similar way to something like a box plus minus or a player impact plus minus, where, you know, a rebound's worth 0.8 and a steal's worth 1.3 or something, different things like that.
Yeah.
Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Generally, the leaders in that category are guys that are like the number one guy in that category off the top of my head, probably a favorite for league MVP, is averaging a near triple double, along with as a 6'5" point guard getting a couple steals, blocking a shot. So his contribution efficiency wise is a lot higher than someone else only contributing in two categories.
Nice. That's cool. And I think data availability is such a critical thing. What you're able to see is different from what you'd be able to see if you were, you know, Michigan State's coach versus if you were the Lakers coach versus if you were a high school coach. So it's all about finding the best knowledge available to you, whether that's things like that efficiency metric, or if you're in the NBA and you've got spatial tracking data, like take the best info you can that's automated and use that to help drive decision making. And then, like you said earlier, being able to track things just on the bench with a piece of paper or scouting games before or after them can be so valuable. So there will probably always be a degree of legwork involved with that, because it's going to be a while before I think we have computers that can figure out if, you know, I hear people on Twitter saying somebody got blown by when really they were just icing a ball screen and doing their job. So getting a computer to be able to recognize that will probably take a little bit of time. But I think you make a really good point around the idea of defensive stops or, you know, diverting a drive or things like that, because defensive stats pretty much anywhere at this point are very results based. Either so somebody did something and if they took a shot and made it, it'll count. If they took a shot and missed it, or they got a turnover, got to the foul line, that'll count. But if you run a pick and roll and the defense stops it and then you kick it out and reset and you do something else, in the eyes of like synergy or other defensive, like on a box score, none of that was ever there. None of it ever happened. And that was really just good defense where you shut something down. So if we can get more process-oriented stats that don't rely on somebody taking a shot or making or missing a shot, that could be a really big step forward on the defensive side of the game.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it goes back to, as we said, you know, the analytics and the things we track as coaches are there to aid us in our decision-making, because your eyes lie to you. Your eyes, your feelings, what you think you may or may not see for any coach may not be what's happening in reality. So being able to confirm or go against something that you're thinking when you see the numbers allows you as a coach to make a more informed decision. And I definitely think it helps us a lot, and it helps, I'm sure, other organizations very much as well.
Yeah. I mean, you can go into a coaching room with people with different opinions that are seeing different things on film, and the result of a discussion about trying to solve a problem can end very, very differently based off of power dynamics, compared to if you go into that room and you have hard evidence to prove a point, you might be able to open somebody's eyes to something that otherwise you just don't have the capability to show them. Or maybe it's you realizing what your perspective was, your perceptions were false. So it's numbers and data can be so valuable. At the same time, and maybe this is more of like a people being annoying online question, but if you can make one stat go away, either for coaches or for fans, do you have any ideas there for what you would want that one to be?
Off of general box score, I guess, maybe for me, plus minus, maybe something along the lines of efficiency or defensive stops or, you know, some other analytic that we can replace in that. I think plus minus is good, but I don't think it's the final answer in terms of really showing someone's impact on the floor. And I think every year we're getting closer and closer to fine-tuning that.
For sure. Yeah, and that's some of the goals of like player impact plus minus, is trying to do just that and understand who might be being lucky or unlucky with some of that data. And it can be useful, and it's a useful input for some more complicated stuff that contextualizes a little bit better. But it's not that it's bad. Like, what it's telling you is truthful, but it's used irresponsibly, I think. Or people misunderstand how to use it or what it's telling you. The same way, you know, I'll hear, all right, Rudy Gobert's defensive efficiency was 100. Well, that's a team stat. That's not a player stat. If we're talking about points your team gave up per 100 possessions, there's just not enough context there. So it can be useful piece of info to do other analysis for, but on its own, it doesn't tell you a whole lot. So that's interesting. Let's get that done. Let's get a petition put together.
We'll put it on Twitter.
Yeah, we will put it on Twitter, and somebody will disagree. So I think this is all really interesting stuff. Hearing about how data can be so useful in different parts of the game. When you're looking at scouting, what are some of the things that you like to track? If it's that isn't automated in any way, what are, like, you talked about tracking paint touches. Is that something that's important to your team, or what are some of the areas, if you're willing to let us peek under the hood, that, you know, KJ Smith, assistant coach, is looking at every day?
Just to make sure I have this correctly, as far as scouting our opponents and what we're looking for, or scouting our own team?
I guess I was thinking scouting opponents, but you can take it either way.
Well, as far as scouting opponents, there's a couple different areas we go. And I think generally most teams do this similarly. I think most teams are scouting the O's and X's as far as the play call, what are the actions, how often they run it. Because obviously if you know the team sets up beforehand and you know what they rely on, you can prepare strategies to sort of make things difficult for them. After that, it's definitely player driven. So for sure, the no play is perfect. No set play is unbeatable. It always comes down to the players. And I remember hearing this a long time ago, the best offense is better players. So as coaches, it's about who is putting their strongest players in positions to be effective with what they do well. So for us, it's definitely about Who's a good shooter? Who goes right well? Who goes left? Is it a particular dribble move they like to do? Any tendency that you can find matters, because there's always a pattern, no matter how random it seems, especially when it comes to the opponent.
That's interesting. That's good stuff. And just watching random film, and if you're not tracking anything, it can be really difficult to identify those patterns. And some people can be better at it than others, but sometimes your eyes can deceive you. Sometimes, you know, you may think they ran a certain play most, but really it was a different one. So it's interesting to hear how that scouting can come into play. I guess my last data question would be, game just ended, your team just won, you're going up to the scores table, they give you a box score. What's the first thing that you're looking at there?
Luckily for us in the league, they give us a lot of information besides the general box score. So we typically get the traditional box score with, you know, points, rebounds, assists, plus minus, the efficiency stat that we mentioned earlier. We'll get a pretty good cumulative of points off turnovers, points in transition, points in the paint, points off the bench, which is a really huge one for our group in particular. We have a very strong bench. And my personal favorite is the lineup data, where both teams are tracked, every five-man lineup that is out on the floor, for how much time, what was the point differential while they were on the floor, and the other stats. How many rebounds did that lineup have in 4 minutes? How many steals, assists? And it's something that I take very, very seriously. I value it just in the aspect of the player that maybe on paper doesn't quote unquote fit when you look at him in a vacuum. You find out how valuable he is in a particular lineup against a particular opposing lineup. And that, I think, is where the game has really evolved.
That's awesome. That's cool to hear. I feel like we just don't get these perspectives shared a whole lot on TV or in the media. So thank you, KJ, for coming today. Really appreciated it. I'm sure the listeners will as well. If we want to be following you, following your team, following the work that you're doing, I know you've in the past contributed publicly with some of your stuff for Fast Model, just sharing some really, really great plays. I know I would always save them or screenshot them, because it's always really good stuff. How should we be following you moving forward?
Definitely the best way would be to follow me on Twitter. My handle is at KJ the Scout. Very easy to find, at least I hope. Hopefully there's not a lot of KJs out there that are also scouts. But you can find me there. I do things for Fast Draw. During the season, I slow down a little bit, but I will be updating some X's and O's that I've learned from Brazil to share with the coaching community as well. And I'm always available either to, you know, DM me questions or exchange ideas, anything to grow the game.
Awesome. Thank you, KJ. And yeah, so it's at KJ, and then there's an underscore, the underscore scout.
That's correct.
I'm living that same underscore life, and you got to make sure the people know they're there, that they'll give up. So KJ the Scout with some underscores in between. Again, thank you, KJ, for joining us. I guess my last question is, Australian and Chinese leagues? That's where you're doing your scouting?
I'm very serious. It's very fortunate that our league allows all of the teams to have this synergy access. So with international basketball, it's – and I tell this to our head coach all the time, giving me synergy, as much as I like to dissect the opponent, it's like you handed me the keys to – a Maserati, and you just said, hey, have fun with this. So I don't care if it's Australia, Canada, China. I literally have a system on my board, and every day I watch a different country's league, whether it's Argentina, whether it's some league no one's ever heard of. I don't care where the information comes from.
Wow. And what percentage of the time would you say that it's high level? Like, I guess my question is, I would assume that across different leagues in the world, the level of X's and O's will differ, the styles will differ. What would be a good place for me to look if I were to suddenly get international synergy access? Where should I be looking to try to expand my knowledge if you had to pick a specific country to take a look at?
Whew. a specific country.
Or that, maybe just a couple.
Yeah,
because I'm sure some are in the Stone Ages. I'm sure some are you know, driving around spaceships at this point from an X's and O's standpoint. Where should we be looking? And then I guess, how does the U.S. compare? Is the U.S. top of the line, or do we have a lot more to learn?
I think the U.S. does have more to learn. Obviously, I think the U.S. is strong with their X's and O's. I don't think there's much debate in that department. But for sure, I think there's other places that are more tactful with their O's and X's as far as how they approach and think the game, how they strategize, especially late clock situations where they do some very unique things that I think are slowly being brought into America. But there's so many good countries out there. There's definitely Spain for sure. Australia. I'm sure I can name maybe half of the teams in the EuroLeague as well, whether it's, you know, teams from Greece, for example. Those would probably be my favorites. Australia, Spain are probably two of my personal favorites.
Awesome. I'll have to check out some film. Thank you again, KJ, for joining us. Best of luck for the rest of the season. Go win another title. Everybody go follow KJ on Twitter, KJ the Scout, with some underscores in between there. Definitely search for his X's and O's stuff. I'll try to dig up some of the ones I liked from the past and repost those. But thanks again, KJ, for joining us, and best of luck this year.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'll definitely be, as always, watching your website now and again to see what more information I can use to help us. So thank you for the work that you do that allows us coaches to better ourselves.
Really appreciate that. It's all fun and games on the internet, but when you can work on cool stuff that tries to raise the bar, or at least tries to advance the discussion, or it's insane to me that to think that real coaches could be using our stuff to help them win games. That's just the most powerful stuff in my eyes. That's what makes this fun, is being able to make a difference, not just chat with your friends or win an argument online or at work, but being able to see how the game we love can change. So thanks again, everybody. You've been listening to the B-Ball Index podcast. You can follow the site on Twitter at @V_B_Index. You can find me online at CranjusNickBasketball, or my handle is Tim_NBA. And again, KJ's KJ the Scout with some underscores in between. Thanks for joining us, everyone.